we talk about the discrimination, the prejudice, the real thing is the racism. People say, I'm not doing anything. And you don't need to do anything to continue racism. Racism thrives through inaction.
Do you believe that before there can truly be authentic reconciliation, there has to be a recognition of what has taken place?
Sure. There's no place you can run in America that the land isn't stolen. We have to start by being honest and say, everything we have is tainted. And now start walking with the humility.
This country is really interested in seeing us come to this place where we can begin to address our past and bring about an effort to try to resolve some of this mindset. Welcome. Welcome to the show today. You know, it's impossible to watch the news and not be confused, stressed out, and even scared. The tension in our country, for multiple reasons, is a nonstop situation that could leave us feeling bewildered. Now, whether it's the economy, government, or society as a whole, all of it is simply exhausting. It's hard to believe in this day and age that race relations are one of the things triggering a divide in our nation. Many of us are left feeling hopeless. But today, we're going to have a real conversation about how to heal our nation and take a step towards racial reconciliation in America. My guest today is a personal friend of mine, an expert healer on race relations. He's a voice to the subject of fear, a modern-day abolitionist, and a thought leader all in one. We're going to pray for our nation as we learn to put our differences aside and love one another in the spirit of unity. I invite you to join me for this special edition of Your World, and we'll be right back.
Changing one life, time after time. Oh Lord, we do it all for you. Through the trials I see.
Welcome back. My guest today is Mike Smith. He's a pastor, an accomplished author, and a spiritual mentor to many. He has spoken at conferences nationally and internationally, is a frequent minister at my events, and was a presenter at various TEDx events. He is a father of two beautiful children and husband to the love of his life. And in addition to all of that, what many don't know about Mike Smith is his keen insight into race relations, and more importantly, God's plan to bring healing in this area. So please help me and welcome Mike Smith to Your World today. Hey, buddy. You know, for me today, to have you on this show, it's just like what we do.
Yes, sir.
You know,
yes, sir.
It's the lunch we have or the time that we spend together. But I'm so excited about what God has shown you. I like and love the balance, the revelation, and the insight that my heart is that America could hear it.
Yeah.
And the rest of the world could hear it. So I want to begin with this question. What is your opinion concerning the state of our nation right now?
Well, I have a natural opinion, a spiritual opinion. I'll start spiritual first. Napoleon said, don't ever interrupt your enemy when he's making a mistake. And I think the devil is making a mistake by getting everyone so saturated in fear, division, negativity. He thinks he's advancing his cause, but I believe in actuality he's opening up hearts to hear peace and truth and healing like never before. So I look at our country, I look at the world, and I'm not afraid, because I believe that the more worn out people are by all this constant strife, negativity, pettiness, the more open they're going to be to hear the word of the Lord. And so, spiritually speaking, I'm excited. I'm not afraid. Jesus is still on the throne. I think, you know, Supreme Court passes a law, somebody gets elected, somebody doesn't get elected, and I think the vast majority of people assume, you know, well, Jesus has left the building, and that nothing could be further from the truth. This is our time to shine. This is our time to demonstrate that the wisdom of God is higher than the wisdom of the world. We've been training for a day like this.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, we were talking the other day, and the number 17 means complete victory.
Yeah.
And I believe we're in a season where we're going to see some things come to its completion. And I said earlier that God never calls anybody that's already been prepared, you know, or even that's perfect, or even qualifies.
Yeah.
But what God will do is He'll call you and then He'll qualify you.
Yes.
Who are we to say who God can use and who God can't use?
That's it. That's it.
You know?
Yeah.
So as you look at this, I remember when you were in Jacksonville, man, you wrote a serious article on racism in America. You dealt with the rappers who were singing, and you dealt with people who were financially benefiting from those rappers.
Yeah.
What was the repercussion of that article that you put out?
My basic thought on race, racism, race relations, is that we have a wrong understanding of the problem, so we're prescribing the wrong solution. It's if you misdiagnose, you misprescribe. And the reason we're still having the same conversation that we've had for several hundred years in this country. I was in Las Vegas a couple of years ago. I was actually during 2008, and what I was doing in Vegas, it has to stay there. But I was sitting talking to a gentleman, and the subject of the election came up. President Obama was running against McCain, I believe it was. A guy told me, he said, you know, young fella, he said, the first election I had a chance to vote in, the issues were race, the economy, the Middle East, and the war. He says, it's been 40 years. What are the issues? I said, race, the Middle East, economy, and the war. This is the world. They operate from natural wisdom, lowercase w. And the solution is not in the lowercase w wisdom. It's in the capital wisdom. So the article I wrote was trying to call out what I perceive to be the real issue. And the real issue in America is not prejudice, because I don't think you'll ever fully get rid of ignorance. It's not even discrimination, where sometimes people, based on their prejudice, decide certain things to discriminate against group people. It's racism, and racism is systemic. Prejudice requires a human mind and a heart. Discrimination requires a human hand. But racism doesn't need either. It just churns in the background. It just goes on generation after generation and produces the same outcomes over and over and over again. So I questioned, dealing with music, the rap artists or artists, they're immaterial. They're really a puppet of a bigger system. Who assigned the role of criminal to the black man in our nation? I mean, why is it that when a white man gets up and raps about who he's going to kill, who he's going to rob, who he's going to shoot, they say, you're being fake, stop it, don't, you know, be yourself. But when a young black guy gets up and sings it, it's like, now that's authentic. As a matter of fact, if he's arrested for a crime, he's even more authentic, because in America, we've assigned the role of criminal to that man.
Wow.
And until you start shining the light on the hidden sub, you know, it's not, you know, it's, people say the N-word, and there's a hole, well, you could talk a whole bunch on that, but we talk about the discrimination, the prejudice. The real thing is the racism. People say, I'm not doing anything. And you don't need to do anything to continue racism. Racism thrives through inaction. You got to do something to stop it.
Wow.
That's what that article was about.
Wow. I'm sitting here trying to milk that. Racism strives through inaction.
Inaction, yeah.
Go ahead and continue, man.
Well,
don't let me interrupt you.
Here's the thing. So how many years? So in the United States currently, and the numbers are changing, Dr. King used to always talk about gradualism, and the enemy was gradualism. People kept saying, it'll get there. At what human cost? You know, if blacks are 6 to 7 to 1, overrepresented in prison, 7 to 8 to 1 overrepresented in homicide, 3 to 4 to 1, depending on who you deal with, adults or children, up to 5 to 1 overrepresented in poverty. People say, well, it's getting better. So we go another 40 years, another 80 years of crying mothers, broken families, et cetera. we don't even know what we're after. Mm-hmm. You know, when President Obama was elected, I told my church we prayed over him and just declared over he and his family and no tragedy and no, you know, just I'm grateful to God to see him finish his course. But I said, you know, this is great. I remember watching CNN the night of the election. A guy says, well, former Secretary of Education said, well, let this be the signal to everybody that racism is over in America. And I couldn't believe that statement. And I told my church, watch the bus stop. Watch the bus stop. We've got a black president, which, you know, was carefully marketed as black, but also white. Like, you know, I mean, it was very carefully constructed. You know, an African-American president, you know, this is a big conversation on that. Mm-hmm. But we patted ourselves on the back and said, well, we got rid of that. But the bus stop, the prison, poverty, education, HIV, we don't even know where we're going because we won't know how to measure when we get there. Mm-hmm. My theory is this. If black males are 6% of the population, they ought to be 6% of prison. Mm-hmm. They ought to be 6% of the homicide victimization. Mm-hmm. And in America, it's so dark that if we were able to get the homicide victimization down from 7-1 to 3-1, people say, great victory. Three times as many dead young black men. We would say, whoa, we're really doing good. How long till we live in an equal America? Mm-hmm. So having a black president or Voting Rights Act, all those are great things. But when can we really say that the sins of yesterday are thoroughly scrubbed?
Do you believe that before there can truly be authentic reconciliation, there has to be a recognition
sure.
of what has taken place.
Sure. Yeah. That's the thing. We kind of want to just shake hands and go on
yeah.
without paying any heed or credence to why things are the way they are. Yeah. I have a teaching that I do called Black to the Future. Mm-hmm. And it's if we had a time machine and went back, and instead of Europeans settling the new continent and pushing out the red man, if Africans had come, if they'd gone to Europe and gotten slaves mm-hmm. and brought 500,000 slaves here, 4.5 million roughly slaves in the antebellum South, would it be white people on the radio talking about dealing drugs? Would it be white people on the radio 7-1 overrepresented in homicide? Would it be white people in prisons at 6-7-1 the African majority? Mm-hmm. And here's how you know if you're racist or not. If you believe history reversed, 150 years after the Civil War, if I ask you, so do you believe white people would be, Europeans would be 3-1 in poverty, some 5-1, 12-1, depending on look at HIV and AIDS, new diagnosis, do you believe that would be white people, and do you believe black people, Africans, would be owning the wealth, owning land, et cetera? And if you say, no, I don't believe that because white people would have figured out something by now, you're making a race statement. You're saying this is not historic. You're saying it's a defect inside the human being.
I know that there's a cost for reconciliation.
Yeah.
Because what it's going to do, it's going to expose the real truth of our hypocrisy.
Yeah.
And to have to go back in the past and to have to recognize that this is wrong, that wasn't exactly the way that was. Oh, we dressed this up.
Right.
Do you think that we can ever experience authentic reconciliation if we keep dressing up the lies?
No, and that's the thing I think that is happening now with this yeah. next generation. So World War II ends. The Soviets are coming in from the east. The Allies are, I guess, coming in, French and British coming in from the north. Mm. The generals that land in the concentration camps, the first thing they do, and Alfred Hitchcock, believe it or not, was contracted to make this documentary, they go get all the German villagers and walk them through the concentration camps by the bodies, 50,000 rotting bodies, and they take all the villagers, men, women, and children. You watch them on video. This is within hours. The general says, go get everybody that lives within a couple miles. So they can walk past the stench. You see them retching. You see them having to look at children, hacked up bodies. It's gruesome. And they said, train the cameras on the Jewish, on the German faces with the bodies of the Jewish people. And they said, why? So that nobody years from now can say America made that up, that it didn't really happen like that. I want German faces with the dead Jewish bodies so that no one will ever say, well, it wasn't that bad. I'm sure it was bad. You need to see the horror. Well, the problem is we didn't have video cameras for our American horror. But now people carrying cell phones. We act like this is the first time four cops ever got together and said, yeah, he came right at me, I had to shoot him. It's been going on for years, but for the first time, we're seeing the horror captured for real. And so, whereas, you know, people, I know there was slavery, but it wasn't that bad, or I know, you know, slavery was everywhere, all those things we used to dismiss instead of recognizing the horror. And all my theory is this. Nobody here in your audience or anybody watching around the world, specifically in the States, red, yellow, brown, black, white, we cannot distance ourselves. We can never scrub ourselves clean enough from the impurity of this land. If you say, I'm going to give up every advantage I have, you know, a first lady said, she says, I have to reconcile that every night, Michelle Obama said, I have to sleep in a house built by slaves. There's no place you can run in America that the land isn't stolen and that blood, the backs of other people, even as a black man. If you say, I'm going to give up all my money, I'm going to starve to death, the road that the ambulance takes you to in the hospital was gotten illegally. Mm. Even if you starve to death and won't accept the feeding tube, they will bury you in ground that was stolen. None of us can escape. America is a blessed place. It's fortunate. It's on a hill. We have to start by being honest and say everything we have is tainted. And now start walking with the humility. I was looking at it earlier. Joshua, he says, look, the Reubenites and half the tribe of Manasseh, he said, you have your rest. But you're going to go over here and fight for your brethren until everybody has the same rest you do. So it's up to people that look like me in the power structure. Mm-hmm. You know, I represent the power structure in this country. Mm-hmm. To pause and recognize that what we stand on is illegally gotten and immorally gained, mm-hmm. and to not quit and not rest until we carve out so that poverty equalizes, mm-hmm. infant death equalizes, education equalizes, to not say, well, we're totally free until we've done the dirty, nitty-gritty corner work to ensure that freedom. And I don't think we're ready for that conversation yet because it gets to, that wasn't me. I didn't do that. That was a long time ago.
Do you think this country is really interested in seeing us come to this place where we can begin to address our past and bring about an effort mm-hmm. to try to resolve some of this mindset?
I think because I believe in the better angels of human nature, I think the vast majority of people, red, yellow, brown, black, white, don't enjoy the strife.
Yeah.
I think actuality as people, we're better than our history.
Yeah.
I think when you go out to Starbucks or McDonald's or the grocery store, I think people are by and large doing well. We are not even the negative people we're being portrayed as in the media. Mm-hmm. I think where we live every day, we're doing okay. But I think the power structure, white people primarily go, there's no problem because we ignore the systemic issues that haven't been addressed. Mm-hmm. And I think by and large, people want peace, but they don't want to be honest and ask the real questions. So here's the bottom line. I think we keep misprescribing. We got a black president. Well, that's it. That's not it. That's good, but there's got to be more. And I think people say, are you talking about additional welfare? No, I'm saying recognition. Recognition to say there's a reason that this is not the way it is, and we're not going to dismiss anymore. But there's a general feeling among a lot of whites of we've done everything for them. And not realizing that saying, oh, here's a housing project, and here's some schools you can go to, that's not even the issue. The issue is a core belief that this person is not inferior to me. And I believe the vast majority of white people still believe subconsciously that there's not something wrong with America, that there's something deficient in this group of people.
Your identity will ultimately determine how you behave.
Sure.
And if you put on the wrong identity.
Sure.
And then the behavior there, you want to get crucified for your bad behavior, but you don't want people don't want to recognize their part in giving you that identity that produced that bad behavior. Now, we're not trying to make excuses for anybody.
Yeah.
But what we're doing is saying, if you're going to experience real change and reconciliation, you got to recognize the truth of the matter.
Right.
And begin to deal with that. Now, this next question, boy.
Can I just say one thing on that? Do you mind?
Sure.
I'm sorry. It's
mm-hmm.
your show, and I don't want to get thrown off. It's my first time.
I promise you I won't.
Okay, good. But this is an interesting thing. At the end of the day, people's decisions rest squarely on their shoulders.
Yeah.
On the individual side. People say, well, this is modern, a lot of whites, not all whites, think, well, if you're black from a broken family, living in a poor part of the country, you deal drugs. That's not true. Mm-hmm. Do you know how many black kids, single parents, never dealt drugs? Mm-hmm. Ever. So when you see, well, this guy's in the same neighborhood, dealt drugs, killed four people, we say, well, he really had no choice. That's not true. At the end of the day, every person's decision lays squarely on their shoulders.
Yes.
But it's not either or. But when you see people making decisions, in a pool at a rate higher than their white counterparts. Then you have to say, okay, do white people kill people? Yes. Do black people kill people? Yes. Do you know, at the time, more than 50% of every black male, 15 to 34, I believe it was, got into the afterlife via homicide. I want you to think about that. Half of it was the number one cause of death for black males, 15 to 34, I believe it was, for like a decade. As a matter of fact, in 2009, I think, was the first time death by law enforcement registered on the top 10 causes of death. Now, among whites, the top 10 causes of death, same age group, white males, is unintentional incidents, accidents, four-wheelers and things like that. But when you die and you say, I've got a room full of 100 kids, how many of you got here by a four-wheeler accident? Half of white kids raise their hand. When you go to the room of 100 black kids, how many of you got here because somebody took your life? Half of the black kids raise their hand. This is not acceptable. So there must be something wrong with black kids, or there's something wrong with the messages. Because actions come out of choices. Choices come out of thoughts and feelings. Thoughts and feelings come out of worldview and messages. Where are we sending messages that this behavior is more in harmony with who you are and this behavior is not? So it's a war of identity basically from birth on. And so because I have worked in very rough areas with minorities for 20 years of my life, I know that just because somebody's black with no dad around, that grew up in a rough area, that doesn't mean killer, because there's a lot of people that go to school, they don't deal drugs, they respect their parents, blah, blah, sure. blah. But white America says, if you're black, born in the hood, you're going to be a killer. That itself becomes... So Tupac, and again, I'm not a fan of Tupac, but there's a fascinating thing he said, and I got to watch my language here. He said, so you know what? I'm going to smoke weed, because that's what, he said, the N-word do. And yeah, I'm going to carry a gun, because he said, if you keep telling me that, that's what I'm going to be. So the deception from the devil comes, pushing you in the back towards negativity, and then having you embrace it with a cavalier attitude, knowing every time a kid goes into jail, he pushes you in the back, pushes you in the back, pushes you in the back, and as soon as that jail cell shuts, the devil goes, man, why'd you do that? The same devil that nudges you into it shames you for doing it on the back end. And so therefore, it's a war of identity on all fronts. I mean, he's dead. Tupac is dead. And we say, well, he spoke out for women, he spoke out for this. Yeah, but he was both things at the same time. Yeah. Humiliating them in one video, speaking out for them in the next. The last video we have of him alive is stomping on another black man in a casino and shot down. I mean, he is the collision of consciousness and corruption. He is the prototype for America that beauty and ugly can collide in a human being. Is he a beautiful person or is he a killer? Who knows? Who knows what is? All we know is that as far back as we can remember, we've been sending negative messages that criminal and black are connected. And if we don't get in the way of those messages, how long will it take to stop it? It's a millstone that's been turning. You got to stand in front of it first. You got to slow it down. Then you got to get enough momentum to get it going back direction. How long does it take to get it going in a healthy direction? But that is the church. I don't know what the church is doing. You know, we think, oh my gosh, the worst thing that ever happened is Supreme Court ruled on this or abortion or whatever. Are you serious? The worst thing that ever happened is when we devalued human beings in the name of Christ. That's the worst thing that ever happened.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Let's thank our guest, Michael Smith, for coming in and having this challenging but real conversation with us today. We certainly appreciate it. Thank you for tuning in to this very special edition. We'll continue this conversation on overcoming fear and how to bring healing and reconciliation to your world. Is there racism in church?
Sure. It's there and it's overt and it's covert sense. It's hard to see the ugliness of your own heart. The Bible talks about the heart of man is exceedingly deceitful. You just don't really know. You need a mirror to see it, you know.
You know, God knows what we're feeling. And his message to us is don't panic. Listen, I am so excited. I had Michael Smith for part one of a series of conversations as we spoke about racism and reconciliation and race relations. And if you missed part one, oh my goodness, you want to be ready and privileged to know that part two is here for you today. It is going to be amazing. It's going to be something that's going to challenge your thinking and even challenge some of your tradition, whether it's good or bad. Michael Smith is here with us today. We're excited about him being here with us today. Would you please, audience, welcome Michael Smith right back to the Your World Show.
Thank you.
Again, I want to start off with this question concerning this area of reconciliation, this area of racism. Is there racism in the church?
Sure. It's there in its overt and its covert sense. Of course, you know, Dr. King talked about the most racially divided hour, 11 a.m. on Sunday. I was on a television show dealing with racism, racism and religion in Jacksonville. And the church that we had in Jacksonville was 40%, and then 10%. It was a very diverse church. Mm-hmm. And pastors would call me and compliment me on, you know, it really says a lot about you to have that type of church. And, you know, part of it is if you're diverse as a person, you know, I'm able to make in the same sermon an AC/DC reference, a Two Live Crew reference, and a Kenny Rogers reference. And so somewhere in there, you know, nobody knows everything I'm talking about, but somebody goes, I know what he's talking about there, you know what I'm saying? So, but this is an interesting thing. And he said, I'm a black pastor, and I want to do that too. And I made this statement. I said, well, it's interesting because as a white pastor, having a diverse congregation is a downhill walk. A black pastor having a diverse congregation is an uphill walk. Now, you and I were in a restaurant. This is 20 years ago, and a very nice lady came up to you. We were eating dinner, and you may not even remember this, but a lady came up and she said, oh, Creflo, she said, I just love you so much, and I'm going to come to your church there when Brother So-and-so is there, and I'm going to do this. And you said, oh, you know, you, and this was 20 minutes from the church. Oh, you ought to come back so-and-so. Oh, is he coming in? And I just remember thinking, she said, well, we visit every time, and the people that she named, we visit every time so-and-so is there, was a white pastor, preacher was there. And she said, oh, and I love you at the Believers' Convention. You're so awesome at the Believers' Convention. And I realized, just raw truth, for a white man to lead his family under the covering authority of a black pastor is a much greater stretch from that white man's perspective than a black man leading his family under covering of a white leader. Because the principal, the sheriff, the mayor, they're used to seeing white people in authority at all times. But for many white people, the idea of dropping off their children in the sea of black faces with a black caregiver, even though historically we've used black women as caregivers for white children throughout
Whoa,
our country.
You but meddling we, now,
okay,
boy.
Sorry,
you
I'm
meddling.
I'm sorry.
You meddling
sorry,
now.
Sorry. but I digress. but now all sorts of fears. This goes to identity. I was 12. And one of my progenitors on one side of my family, they had been staying with us, and there was a black man working in the yard. And he came and whispered in my ear. He says, hey, you see that guy out there? I said, yeah. He said, no matter what he drives, no matter how much money he has, no matter what house he is, he'll never be as good as you. He can have more money than you and everything else, but he'll always be, he said the N-word. Mm-hmm. And he said, don't you ever forget that as long as you live. And it scared me at 12 mm-hmm. because a lot of people would say, you know, I come from a whole group of people that say, look, I ain't racial or nothing, I'm just saying. And usually whatever follows I'm just saying is the most racist thing you've ever heard in your entire life, you know. But if you would ask me, any of my family, if we were racist, if we were prejudiced, we'd say no, because it's hard to see the ugliness of your own heart. The Bible talks about the heart of man is exceedingly mm-hmm. deceitful. You just don't really know. You need a mirror to see it, you know. And I told my mom, I said, yeah, so-and-so told me. She went nuts. She came in there. We weren't safe. She came in there. You blankety blank, blanket blank. Don't you bring your redneck stuff around my, blah, 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 blah. But it was interesting about identity. Not only was I told who was worth more or who was worth less, I was told I was worth more. Mm-hmm. So these messages get delivered and we pick them up like in the air. My wife, one time I was talking about the N-word. I said, did you ever say the N-word growing up? She said, yeah, I did. I called my sister. That I was mad at her one time and I called my sister that. She said, I got in so much trouble for saying that. I said, where'd you learn it from? She said, I don't know. It's in the air. Very few white people can tell you where they picked up the stuff. we're just a slow drip fed to us throughout our lives. So we may not even be, they call it, you know, a subconscious or unconscious bias. To take my family to go to a church where it arouses generations of, who are you leaving your kids with? You know, just being honest, do they smell the same? Do they look the same? Do they value the same thing? Because we're not told they're different kind. It's not different kind. We're told it's other kind, that they have different values, different morals, different worldview. Mm-hmm. And unless you're around it, you'll never get rid of that. You told me 25 years ago, you said, Mike, all growing up, I wanted a friend. Remember, tell me of every race. I wanted this friend, that friend, this friend, because I wanted to learn. Very few people have even the courage to step outside of their box. I was with a conversation one time, and the boss lady said, well, call the people back. And here's the phrase, it's ugly, but she said, and Jew them down on the price. And the lady said, what did you say? She said, Jew them down on the price. And the lady said, I'm Jewish. She said, oh, does that offend you? She said, yeah, that offends me. But you can say that in a room full of non-Jews and nobody even notices it. And a lot of times the little subtle prejudice we have is never checked because it's only uttered among people that never notice it to begin with. So to go to a church and to bring my family to a place that I've not even had lunch with somebody of a different color, and then to come here, man, that's tough for people. That's tough for people. So, yeah, it's there. And I will tell you this. The church is prejudiced in both ways because of white supremacy, in my opinion. I was told when I started the church in Jacksonville, I have a lot of brothers around the world that called me and said, hey, if you have black people in your church, you really got to watch them. I said, why is that? They said, because we'll tear stuff up, and we'll try to take over authority, and we'll try to do this. And I said, where did you get this from? I said, what slave master left you in charge? I said, now watch them now. They're going to get out of control, boy, so you got to watch what they're doing. I said, who has told you that? And we had thousands of people in our church, never caused us an issue. I won't even tell you where I had the issue, but it was not with my black members. I swear it was not my black members. Now, why is that? Is that because they treated me different because I was white? See, some stuff is so deep, we don't even know what drives us. Mm-hmm. We're just living that we think is organic thoughts, but we don't have organic thoughts. They come from messages we got somewhere. We got those messages somewhere.
You know, you were told by one of the staff members of Joe Biden that we need a new script.
Yeah.
Because we keep operating by the old one.
Yeah.
What do you think he meant by that?
It was a supernatural thing. I'd written the article, went to put that article in the Jacksonville paper, and one of the guys loading the papers on the dock, it was about 150,000 articles we were going to put, started as a one-page article and turned into a 10-page article that my wife and I, we took a special section. They were loading it in the Sunday paper, and a guy on the dock flipped out and said this is racist, it's race baiting, you cannot print this, we'll protest if you do it. So they pulled the article. The guy that protests on the dock, I said, well, don't burn my newspapers. I sent some of my staff down to get them. When some of my staff, half were black, half were white, came to get the newspaper, the guy that was upset said, you black guys are with this Mike Smith fellow. They said, yeah, that's our pastor. He said, oh, I thought he was anti-black. And they're like, anti-black? What are you talking about? So the guy ended up going back upstairs to the boss, say, we won't riot, go ahead and print it. But the newspaper was so nervous that if our staff freaked out like this, what would happen elsewhere? So somehow this gets up to a person that worked for Vice President Biden. He got a copy of it, and he wanted to talk to me on the phone. And he said, I've read it. He said, I'm interested. I said, do you think I should talk to the Vice President? He says, I don't know if you should or not, but I do want to tell you this. If you want to change the American drama regarding race, keep feeding us new lines on how to think and talk to ourselves. I find in many circles that I'm in, whether it's through TED or through other organizations, that I'm often the English interpreter of English. Mm-hmm. People are really trying to connect. They just don't know how to. Schopenhauer had a theory on this, that we're actually like porcupines. We're cold in the night. We don't want to be separate. But we try to get warm and poke each other. Mm-hmm. And the pain of poking each other pushes us to be separate, but we don't like being cold, but we try to get together. And that's really what's happening. Mm-hmm. By and large, when you look at your audience, nobody here is fighting. Mm-hmm. Nobody here goes out afterwards and walks past them. And sure, that happens. Mm-hmm. But the vast majority of us want to connect. We just need somebody to try to explain it from the other person to understand. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what they meant by new script. And I received that. I don't know if this guy was a Christian or not. I have no idea. But he told me that on the phone, this guy. He said, look, he was in Delaware. He said, I work for the Vice President. Here's my thing. And I just have to tell you, he said, just don't stop writing. He said, keep pouring words into the conversation so that over time people start using new words to say the same thing. And that's what I'm hoping for, is that something, somehow at a kitchen table, some people start thinking about it differently. And if we get everybody renewing their mind to go, you know what, we're better than our history. Mm-hmm. We're really not that against each other. We just have to recognize what was and then work together to mitigate all those lingering echoes of yesterday. I believe 20 years from now we could be looking at an entirely different nation. And if we call ourselves a Christian nation, which we could debate that, if we call ourselves a Christian nation, should we not demonstrate that we've dealt with our evils?
Oh, absolutely.
If we go out all over the world, look at us. Yeah. Then we should demonstrate that we fixed
this. Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons why I'm so excited about you being here with us today is so that you can feed those new words.
Yeah.
We just don't know right now, the people that are watching this, that are hearing these words, and it's framing that picture in their head.
Yeah.
And causing them to think differently about what they've thought about it before.
That's it.
And unless our minds are renewed and we bring about a better understanding of what we thought we understood. You remember we used to talk about a person knows more than what they understand.
Sure, sure.
And I think that this show, your world, you bringing us into your world, is helping people to gain another perspective. I'm just really believing that something interesting is going to happen as a result of this show. You know, there's one more topic. I'm getting everything in that I possibly can because I'm thinking that this is so important to hear. But when we talk about wanting to have some type of special thing to happen to the different ethnic groups, to blacks, versus citizenship,
that's
versus
good.
Citizen rights.
That's it. Yes, sir.
Make the distinction and compare and contrast the difference between those two.
Yeah. So the reason they advertise, the reason we know where's the beef, the reason we know have a Coke and a smile, mm-hmm. is that they don't say anything just once. Mm-hmm. They say by the time you recognize you've heard an advertisement, you've actually heard it multiple times, you didn't realize you were hearing it the first time. Mm-hmm. But then what happens is you get oversaturation where it's said so many times you can't hear it anymore. Mm-hmm. Civil rights. The word civil rights simply means citizens' rights.
Sure.
But in the country, the vast majority of us have relegated civil rights to just be dealing with race. Mm-hmm. And I think the word of the Lord for this time is citizens' rights. Mm-hmm. That according to our founding fathers, God himself gave to every human being the right to inhale and exhale life, mm-hmm. the right to move freely, mm-hmm. and the right to pursue happiness, so long as I don't get in the way of your right to inhale and exhale, your right to move freely, and your right to, as long as I don't do that, God said, this is my divine law. And they wrote as men taking dictation, as God has bestowed. I mean, they took it down. And what we're saying in this country on police shootings, voting, everything else, citizens' rights. Mm-hmm. I don't need any other law to say minority this, black this. No. Just give me the full rights guaranteed to me as a citizen. So if you're, and I know your father, Creflo Sr., I met him, as a jewel to have met him, a police officer. We ask citizens to govern us. Mm-hmm. And when you ask a citizen to govern us, we ask a citizen to be an elected official, to be mm-hmm. a law enforcement officer, et cetera, we're doing something holy mm-hmm. to say, hey, look out for us. Mm-hmm. Then we empower that citizen with a gun. Mm-hmm. And if we ever, as citizens, take the life or cause harm to a citizen serving us in a governmental capacity, it's a holy thing. Mm-hmm. But our founding fathers believed this, that if the government ever intruded on your right to be free, to breathe, or to pursue happiness, they were not only creating treason, they were violating divine law, which means you ought to have a right to walk out the front door of Walmart, to walk to your car, and no agent of government should be able to say, excuse me, come here for a second. You cannot impede me from walking from here to there. You know, my wife got elected for jury duty not too long ago, and she and I were talking about it. Don't ever be upset if you get put to jury duty. It's holy work, because what stands between you and the state, the judge works for the government, the prosecutor works for the government, the police work for the government, the investigators work for the government. The only people on your side in that courtroom are the 12 people that are supposed to say, no, our founding fathers did not want the government to be so big that they came against the little guy, they rule on the objections. They determine what evidence gets admitted. Who is going to be in this courtroom and protect this little guy from the government? See, God wanted men to be led by divine government. And so our founding fathers, even though they were flawed, had wisdom to not let the government become so powerful it persecuted the little guy. So if you pull a police off, a man over, a woman over, and you shoot her as an officer, I got scared, I thought they had a gun, but that's understandable. We'll go to a court, we'll figure it out. But if you have violated this person's God-given rights, oh, that's a high crime. Because no agent of the government should ever have gotten in the way of. And if four other officers sign a false statement against a citizen of the United States, I'm not black or white. I'm a citizen of the United States.
Yes.
Now, all of a sudden, I don't care if you're red, yellow, brown, black, and white. You are a citizen. And I'll be doggone, you're not going to have your citizens' rights violated. So they can stop you. They better have a good... So here's what I think. You get a law enforcement officer, and I thank God for law enforcement, and the vast majority of law enforcement agree with me. Mm-hmm. If you have a speed thing and you let somebody, it's 55 miles an hour, you let somebody go at 63, you let somebody go at 77, you let somebody go at 65, you let somebody go at 59, and then you stop somebody for 62, why did you stop that person? Why? And somebody ought to go, you hindered their civil rights, you let eight other speeders go, why them? And somebody have to ask you, you're treading on holy ground, interrupting a person's right to freedom. And we want you to help us, but God gave that man a right to go down that highway without being stopped. And now all of a sudden, when we stop saying, there they go again, they're upset again, and start saying, these are citizens that have the exact same right. When we start to defend your right, red, yellow, brown, black, and white, bless God, if you're a citizen of the United States, you deserve that divine right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness.
Man, that's good, Mike.
That now is...
Man, that's good.
And our government.
Yeah.
See, right now we consider it special in the United States. Mm-hmm. Do you know we can catch a person on crime? I just found out they had the young man shoot the people in the church in South Carolina. They've just now released that young man drove from that church to another church to do it again. Mm-hmm. They found his GPS, tracked that he left that church, went to another church that he had plotted out, got out of the car. They had canceled Bible study that night. Mm-hmm. But he was on his way to shoot somebody else in another church. Do you know we can catch that young man on video, shooting the people, getting in his car, buying the gun, we can do all of it. But you know, as a citizen, he has a right to remain silent, a right to a speedy trial, a right to a trial. But you know, outside of the United States right now, if we consider you a terrorist, we find you in another country, we'll shoot you from 3,000 feet in the air and not think twice about it. Why? Because when we consider you in warfare, you don't have the rights you have as a citizen. So they look at a picture and go, yeah, that looks like him, blow him up. Because in war, that's just what we say. But I don't care if I catch you on film assaulting a woman, raping a cat, and shooting an armored car person. It don't matter on video. You still have a chance to be heard in court. You have a right to make your own defense. Why? Because being a citizen of this country, we consider to be so holy, even if it's as clear as day that you're guilty, we don't take away your rights. And so we can send over across the seas into Bin Laden's compound Navy SEALs. There's 25 people in the house. Everybody's got guns. It's dark. Nobody's been there before. It's a high-pressure situation. And they come out only shooting the people they were after. And yet somebody has a cell phone and 12 people shooting 48 times on the side of the road. We got to do better than that. But you know what? Overseas, they're not citizens. They don't have rights. But right here, we have divine rights that have been given to us by God for life, for liberty. And if me and you are not going to pursue to protect somebody else's divine rights, this is holy. God said, I put life in that man. And anybody that takes life out of that man unjustly will answer to me. We can only give lowercase justice in the earth. But like Brother Hagin, you say, God doesn't settle up every Saturday night. Mm-hmm. But eventually he settles up. Mm-hmm. The capital J justice mm-hmm. comes. Because I know, you know this, there's a difference between being guilty, pleading guilty, and being found guilty. They're not the same. Mm-hmm. There's a difference between being innocent and being found innocent. They're not the same. There's sometimes people are found innocent, they're not. Sometimes people are found guilty, they're not. We do the best we can to protect each other, to guarantee rights. But one day God settles up and he sorts all that other stuff out.
Do you enjoy this? This, you know, the thing that I rejoice over is that we have this on tape and we can share it with the world and we can share it with other nations and we can begin the process of handing over that script.
Yeah.
Those new words. A lot of things happen just by simply being impacted by images and words that you hear. And what we heard today, it makes you hopeful that somewhere in the earth that God Almighty has solutions. And I'm going to tell you something right now. In the name of Jesus, if he ever decides to run for president, dear God, I'll clear my schedule out and get me a little sign and march up and down on National Highway and say, Mike Smith for president, Mike Smith for president. Just as long as he lets me come and spend the night at the Lincoln bedroom, I'll be all right after that. Me and Tap at the Lincoln bedroom.
You got it.
You know, God knows what we're feeling. And his message to us is don't panic. Now, whether the evil will that we see in our life is halfway across the world or in our own neighborhoods or just outside our front door, we can be assured that God is bigger, stronger, and more powerful. That's okay to feel fear, but the key is not to submit to it. We overcome our fears when we rely on what God tells us. And when we believe what's written in the Bible instead of what we see and hear, we begin to feel a great peace settling around us. When we come back, I want to ask you to join Mike Smith and myself as we pray for you and pray for our nation. We'll be right back.